Today is November 18th, 2021. I don't even understand how that's possible. I know I keep saying that, but it's still true. This is episode number 561 of the Apple Context Machine. That is a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine, which will whisk you away to our Facebook group. And today I am delighted to tell you that once again, I am joined by Jeff Gamet. Jeff?
Brian, once again, I am so excited that I get to hang out with you.
Same. Did you like all the steampunk stuff I showed you?
Oh my God, it was great. So all of you that didn't show up until the show actually started, what you missed out on was Brian showing me all this awesome steampunk stuff that he's been looking at and buying.
Yes, lots of fun steampunk stuff on the old Etsy. It's good.
Yes.
Good times. Maybe, I don't know. I might include, here, I'll make a note. I might include a link. To some of the Etsy steampunk stuff I've been looking at. I don't know. I have no idea if my listeners like the steampunk. I love steampunk stuff. I've enjoyed some, although probably not all steampunk writing fiction. And I have enjoyed steampunk movies, like, for instance, the movie, the adaptations of for Sherlock Holmes with Robert Downey Jr.
Yep.
Those were.
I'm glad good. You didn't say Benedict Cumberbatch because.
Yeah, that's not very steampunky.
No.
Although I also like the TV show Sherlock. It's great. Isn't that what it's called? What's the series called? It's just Sherlock, right?
Yeah, it's just Sherlock. Yeah,
with Benedict Cumberbatch. Those are fantastic. I have watched each episode multiple times. And everybody that I've introduced to the show has enjoyed it.
That they are done so well. I mean, they're seriously good.
Do you know if another season / series is coming?
There's rumblings about it every now and then. But, I mean, realistically, we're looking at trying to fit scheduling around two high-profile actors now.
Wait a minute. And what is this? Amazon Prime. Sherlock returns with three. Oh, it's 2017. well, no, it says Sherlock season four. Season four.
Well,
this is an entry for season four. And the. No, what's going on here? Were there four seasons originally and I somehow missed that? Is there a season four that I haven't watched? What's going on here?
It's very possible. Yeah, but trying to schedule around Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman's schedules.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be really surprised if they could make another season happen.
Yeah, no doubt.
And yeah, it might have been four seasons. It's been long enough ago now that it's hard for me to remember. And in my defense, I typically don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
So there was the Six Thatchers I don't remember, the Line Detective I don't remember, and then the Final Problem that I don't remember.
I think you missed a whole season.
Apoplectic.
Okay, everyone, no spoilers for Brian for the last season of Sherlock, okay?
In 2017.
So, right, no spoilers.
So it turns out that the real question is, will there be a season five? That'd be fan. I hope that there is someday. I would certainly understand why it wouldn't be. I would imagine that the wonderful actress that plays, what's her name? His landlord.
Oh, right. Thank you. Now you made me forget her name too.
Yeah, I can't remember the character's name. The actress is incredible. She's just so fantastic. But you know, let's get that season five made while she's still up for it. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
all
right.
That's all I'm saying.
That's what it's all about.
Okay. By the way, this is a tech show about Apple, and and our sponsor today is Coinbase. I'm going to tell you a little bit later in the show how to get $10 worth of free Bitcoin from Coinbase. It's pretty easy to do. Pretty excited about telling you about it. But first, I guess let's dive into the old topic, since we managed to go on a tremendous unplanned side rail right from the top.
We did. And it was glorious.
Sure. Let's go with that. Apple this very week, announced a self-repair program.
So they're going to fix themselves.
No, this is to let you fix your own Apple devices, or at least some of them, or at least some of the things on some of the devices. And this is, obviously a dramatic departure from past policy, which is if you do anything to your own device, if you crack it open, your warranty is just void.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, it's you.
Well, great. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's show.
You really don't know what you're going to say?
So anyhow, I'm thinking that you're going to really love the cinematography in the season of Sherlock that you missed. What was I going to say?
You're just saying that because you're not enjoying Babylon 5.
Brian, I'm really trying.
Here's the thing about Babylon 5. They had story arcs, and they had a story arc for each season, and then for the whole series. By the way, I haven't actually watched a full episode ever. I keep meaning to, but I haven't done it yet. But I admire and love the fact that there was a story arc from start to finish that they wanted to tell, and that they didn't try to keep it going.
Yes, and I appreciate that too. And so for those of you that don't know, I never watched Babylon 5 ever. And I just recently started watching it because so many people said, OMG, Jeff, you're really missing out. And season one was hot garbage. And everyone said, but you have to watch it because it's so important for the rest of the show. And season two forward's great. And season two was a lukewarm garbage. And then in season three, I'm like, okay, well, it's getting better, or my tolerance is improving. I'm not sure which. But Brian, there was a point in season three where they did something that tied directly back into something that happened in season one. And the way it all came together, I was like, you know what? I got to hand it to them. That was really clever writing and a really clever setup. And the way they did the camera work for what they did in season one, and it fit in really well with season three. I got to hand it to them. That was really well done.
How's Buffy going?
Oh, I'm so... Buffy isn't available on Netflix anymore, so it's not like I was going to get back to that. But I was so pissed off because the whole series got spoiled for me.
Okay, and one specific element got spoiled for you.
No, like the whole show got spoiled.
Well, so, but the only thing that was actually spoiled was a specific element by some friends of yours, I might add. They didn't they didn't tell you everything that was coming. They just told you a specific thing that was coming, and you allowed that to spoil the whole show for you.
Yeah, they told me that there wouldn't be any spoilers in watching the musical episode.
Yeah.
And so I had seen, I think, two seasons.
Yeah.
Right. So I'd seen season one and season two, and then I watch the musical episode. And everything in the musical episode
was a spoiler.
It was a spoiler for so much for the whole rest of the series.
For the whole rest of the series. Yeah, I'm super frustrated that they did that because you were really enjoying it. And so anyway, yeah, you should get back to that someday. And then good luck finishing Babylon 5. And, you know, and soon you'll be like watching shows from like the 2000s and stuff. Maybe.
That's ambitious. Just crazy talk.
Yeah. Okay, so Apple announced a repair program that is essentially a major departure from longstanding policy, which was if you or anyone other than us cracks your, like iPhones in particular, open, your warranty is void and you're on your own and, you know, screw you.
Mm-hmm.
And what they'll do is they'll sell you some specific parts. I think it's starting off with the screen, the battery, and some camera stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Does that ring a bell?
That sounds right.
Display, battery, and camera.
That sounds right.
That's what Andrew wrote up for us. And then I guess that includes some specialized tools.
Right, because you need to have the right tools to get into the phone and swap stuff out.
Okay, now here is the thing about this. Apple has been under quote-unquote investigation by EU regulatory authorities in particular about its practices. The people who wish to profit off of fixing Apple devices have been lobbying heavily, including lobbying in the press here in the U.S. for regulatory authorities to crack down on Apple and make these things more reparable. And this move by Apple was clearly a defensive move, or even possibly a reactionary move, in response to those forces, which have been admittedly gathering steam.
Mm-hmm. Fits nicely with my reaction when I heard the news. My reaction was, okay, so Apple is preemptively making a strategic move, and it's really smart for them to do this because it helps them have control over what potentially the outcome could be from all of the complaints about repairability. Or at least
greater control.
Yes. And so, yeah, it makes sense from a strategic and legal standpoint for them to do this. So, sure, great. I mean, part of it feels a little disingenuous because this is a reaction thing and not Apple thinking, you know, it would be really great. And you know what we think people would really love is if we made it easier for users to get parts themselves and just fix their iPhone on their kitchen table. That sounds like a really swell thing to do. That I don't think that was ever in any of the meetings leading up to this.
No, I doubt it.
But
I doubt that strongly.
Yeah, but okay, so here's the other thing that was very interesting to me. For the timing for when this was announced, this wasn't a spur of the moment thing. They had to have been working on the plan for this for a while because that's how Apple is. So it's kind of weird that they would have this, we're going to let people fix their own iPhone plan in the works, and at the same time release an iPhone where if you swap out any component, the whole thing's kind of screwed. You know, like doing the screen replacement and now you can't ever do Face ID on it thing.
Right. Okay, and true, it may be disingenuous. I think that it is reactionary. I think that it is, or reactive. I don't know which version of that word I should use. It is something that Apple is doing to stave off regulators. And
of course it is.
And that's fine and dandy. And I personally have I have mixed feelings about this in the first place. For instance, the loudest voices clamoring for Apple to let us fix our own things are companies who want to profit from fixing our own things for us. And that's that's always bugged me. And I guess I'll single out iFixit. I love iFixit. They do great things. I have multiple iFixit toolkits that are just amazing collections of tools, and they're absolutely terrific. But they do stand to benefit greatly by Apple making their devices more reparable, right? And they don't ever talk about that. They don't ever talk about that. I always talk about like how, you know, we have the right to repair stuff, but I don't know. There's like a sort of disingenuousness of the folks lobbying for this that has always kind of bugged me. But then here's the other aspect of this. Part of let's just be honest about why Apple does this in the first place. Why Apple has always made it hard. First of all, they want to control everything, right? Second of all, if someone's going to make money on fixing stuff, Apple wants it to be Apple. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But sure. Also, Apple makes devices that are so tightly manufactured and integrated, and you know, and all the space is used so, like, better than, I think, at least, better than anybody else's used space to this day. And the reality is that your chances of messing up your iPhone by taking it apart are high. And Apple wants to stop us from doing that. Now, I get that some people may chafe at that. But we'll go ahead and go buy something else, because one of the reasons why you like your iPhone is because of how it feels in your hand.
Well, to be fair, how many people with Android phones are regularly cracking them open and replacing components? My guess is that's just not a thing. And of course, there will always be a handful of people that are doing their own repairs, but I don't think that's what most people do. Yeah, throw away the phone because you got the Android phone on a cheap plan, and now you get another one.
And it's not worth anything anyway.
I mean, yeah. Well, and ultimately, it doesn't matter if it's an Android phone or an iPhone. These devices are ultimately disposable. Whether you want to look at it that way or not, there's a shelf life for all technology.
Right, and the reason why Apple devices are less disposable is partly because of the ways that Apple has made them so tight and small, which is part of why it's hard to fix. So, you know, kind of like, I don't know. I've always been fine personally with taking my stuff to Apple to fix it. And if I wasn't fine with it, I would go buy something else.
Okay, sure. And that's fair.
And I get anyone who disagrees with me on that. And I get anyone who wants something different. I mean, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that this particular fight has never been one that interested me personally.
Are you aware that I actually did a repair on one of my iPhones myself?
Vaguely. How'd that go?
It's fine, but oh my God, it was a process, and it was a very simple fix. I had dropped my iPhone 10 with the case on, and it landed at the exact right position in the parking lot to hit the one rock that stood up higher than the part of the case that's protecting the camera lenses.
Sure.
And it cracked the glass.
Nice. Solid.
Yeah. So, you know, I looked up what it was going to cost for Apple to fix that. And it was more than the phone was worth. And so I went and looked online, and iFixit had instructions, but no parts. So I went and found parts and, you know, got this little kit, and it had the same glass that Apple uses to cover the cameras, and tools to get the old glass out, and, you know, new adhesive and everything. It was a process, because you had to get all the glass and all the adhesive out, and you had to do this without getting anything inside the phone, without right. getting any glass in your own eyes, and without touching the camera lenses. And so, you know, they're like, yeah, this is like a 10-minute project. And I spent,
it probably is for someone who's done it many times.
I don't know how you'd be able to get all that, the rest of that glass out that fast, but maybe. I mean, it was a 2-hour project for me.
I would imagine that a lot of screen or glass replacement projects don't actually have any broken glass inside the device. Right? So that 10 minutes may well have been for devices where that's not the case.
Well, no, that, see, you actually have to chip the glass off, all of it, off the camera.
Oh.
And that's the glass you have to keep out of the phone.
I see. I didn't catch that.
And, yeah. So yeah, it was like a 2-hour process. And when I was done, I had a fingerprint on the inside of the new glass that I put in.
Nice.
And then I realized that's why they include 2 pieces of glass with the kit, so that I could take the new glass off that I just put on and then put the other piece on and not get fingerprints on it. So anyhow, and that was a simple thing. And it was still a crazy process to get through and to do it right. I can't imagine the average person, the average iPhone user, feeling comfortable replacing the front glass, the screen on their iPhone or the battery.
Sure. Sure. All right. So it is interesting that Apple has done this. You made a crack before we started recording didn't you make a crack about like how Apple was doing this so that more people would bring them in?
Yeah, it was something like that. It's like, this is a really great program for increasing Genius Bar repairs, because you send out the kit so people can try and fix their phone, and then they have to bring it into the Genius Bar to get their phone fixed.
Right. LOL. And the question is, how is this going to, to me, the question is, how is this going to affect Apple devices going forward? Because surely Johnny Ive was one of the driving forces behind, keeping everybody out of his precious designs. Steve may have been a driving force for that too.
Well, I mean, Steve was always very clear about the idea that he wanted the Mac to be an appliance.
Right.
So, seeing that in the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple Watch, to a degree in Macs, yeah, it's no surprise. I think going forward, what we've seen right now, or what we're seeing today with this repair program, I don't think it's going to dramatically change the way Apple designs its products. This feels more to me like a strategic move as opposed to a real solid customer service move.
Oh, for sure. 100%. But at the same time, you know, those who say that they want this sort of thing have it. So great. More power to them.
Yeah. More power to them.
I would rather not mess with it, but I get people who want to, or at least just want to be able to make that decision. I feel like, you know, be careful what you wish for. Like, you know, it's like the EU saying that all devices need to use the same charging thing. Like the idea of it is one thing for a company to use a proprietary connector for the sole purpose of making you pay for it, and another when a company uses a proprietary connector in order to improve something. And I personally feel that Lightning was a massive improvement over USB and micro USB and et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Even a big improvement over Apple's own dock connector.
Yeah, the 30 pin dock for sure. It was a massive improvement over mm-hmm. that. Now USB-C is in fact, I don't know if it's an open standard, but it's an open licensable standard. USB-C seems to be pretty good, but limiting companies' options to what's existing seems like a real way to reward not innovating.
I agree. And I imagine if there had been a regulation requiring a standardized video port on all computers, that all computers would still ship with probably just a VGA connector.
Sure. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a fantastic analogy. That's a fantastic analogy, because I think that's exactly what would have been the case.
Yeah. And then if you wanted anything more on your computer, if it was a computer that had internal slots, okay, now you buy a video card that has other connectors on it. Or if it's, say, a laptop, now you need to buy an external adapter or box,
right,
to get the other video connectors.
Right. So be careful what you wish for there. And I feel like Apple doing this reactionary thing in a way that actually has them selling the stuff direct to consumers is an example of be careful what you wish for if you're in the business of trying to fix Apple stuff as a third party. Because, of course, Apple found a way to still continue to cut those folks out.
Yes. Yep.
For whatever that's worth.
And yeah, well, there you go. You're getting what you asked for.
Right. Right. And again,
yeah,
I like iFixit. I mean, I like them as a company. I like them as a consumer. I love their services are fantastic. Like, if you do want a third party to fix your stuff, sending it to iFixit is a great option. But I've always had a problem with the holier than thou campaigning for, you know, self repairability. It's, I mean, like, it's just disingenuous to me.
I can appreciate that. And I'm saying that even as someone that bought an iPod battery replacement kit from iFixit and replaced the battery in my, I still have my iPod that it was the solid state click wheel with the four buttons in a row above the click wheel. So is that what, the fourth gen, I think? So, yeah, I've put a battery in that myself.
Yeah, fair enough.
And iFixit.
I've bought multiple toolkits from them, and they are super high quality and fantastic. And if I was going to send, at this point, I believe if I was going to send a device off for third-party repairs as opposed to, say, sending it to Apple, I would probably be sending it to them. So, in other words, and I just want to be clear, I'm not bagging on iFixit as a company, but I am bagging on that what I felt like was disingenuous language in pushing for more reparability. And then I worry that this could eventually have a negative impact on design of Apple products if they have to make everything super accessible. Like, you don't get the same feel in your hand. You don't get the same fit and finish, and then also have it be super accessible. You just don't. Yeah.
Yes, there's always trade-offs.
There's always trade-offs.
On a side note.
Side note. So we don't do that here, Jeff.
Right, my bad. Then Brian, yeah. Can I have a clarification, please?
Sure.
I never considered having iFixit repair any of my stuff for me. I've always thought of them as a place where I get the stuff to fix it myself.
Oh, so, yeah. And that's that, right. And that's one of their businesses.
So they do actually, do they actually do repairs?
I thought they did. Am I getting
that wrong? I honestly don't know.
That would be so funny.
If only we had something that would allow us to check that.
Yeah. Some kind of way of connecting to some kind of global
database. I'm not seeing anything on their website that says that they actually do it. But Brian, I mean, you are Brian Fracking Chaffin. So if you called them and said, hey, will you fix this for me? I'm sure they would say yes.
Maybe. Oh, my God. I don't think they do. Well, all right. So I'm not going to them to have my stuff fixed. So they do, let's see, tools, parts, and fix kits. I thought they also, oh, well, who knew? Sorry about that. I still love them.
This is the quality programming that people tune in for all the time.
Well, I'll just cut all that out. No one will know what an idiot I am.
Well, that's lucky.
Yeah, that's super lucky. That's super lucky. You know who else is lucky? Coinbase, because they're sponsoring this week's show. And I'm going to tell you all about them. So if you have been looking to level up your financial portfolio, it's always good to diversify. Why not think about cryptocurrency? Something I think about all the time personally. Backed by the world's leading investors, Coinbase keeps your portfolio safe and secure while adding crypto into your mix. And with Coinbase, what you can do is you can buy, sell, trade cryptocurrency. You can buy it with dollars by getting dollars from your bank over, or you can trade cryptos that you have. They have a very, very solid exchange. And then you can also store your cryptos with their web wallet. Coinbase offers a trusted and easy to use platform to buy, sell, and spend cryptocurrency, just like I mentioned. They support the most popular digital currencies on the market, and they make them accessible to everyone. Coinbase is super easy to use. I've been a Coinbase customer for many years, long before they ever sponsored this show. So many years of experience talking about this. They offer portfolio management and protection, learning resources, including, by the way, one of the things I love is they'll have quizzes for new cryptocurrencies where you can learn about the cryptocurrency and then take a quiz and get a very tiny amount of that cryptocurrency as a reward for having gone through the sort of tutorial aspect of it and then actually taking the quiz. Super, super fun. I've learned about, like, that's how I learned about Fetch.ai, one of my current favorite cryptocurrencies. They also have a mobile app, so you can trade securely and monitor your crypto all in one place. Millions of people in over 100 countries trust Coinbase with their digital assets. So whether you're looking to diversify, just getting started, or searching for a better way to access crypto markets, you can start today with Coinbase. And here's the thing, folks, because you're listening to us, for limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/ACM. Sign up at coinbase.com/ACM for $10 in free Bitcoin. This offer is for a limited time only, so be sure to sign up today. And one more time, that's coinbase.com/ACM. I've been a customer for many, many years. I am super excited that they're sponsoring this week's episode of the Apple Context Machine, and you should absolutely go and check them out. One last time, coinbase.com/ACM. Jeff, our second topic is one we're going to sort of dip into the smart home world again.
Hey, here's the funny thing, Brian.
Yeah.
I was waiting for the ad to end so that you could tell me what the second topic was, because honestly, I had completely forgotten.
Oh, nice. That's great. That's the kind of quality content that folks are tuning into here for.
Every single week. So, okay, before we hop in the topic, I just have to ask, is this how it goes every single week when I'm not here as well?
Oh, no. The other shows are always like super professional and planned out and organized.
All right, this checks out, yeah.
Of course they're not, man. You were not just meeting me. I know that you knew the answer to that question before you asked it. But yeah. Anyway, so what we were talking about pre-show, because we talked a lot about smart home stuff recently, and one of the reasons why we talked about it a lot is because, like, you know, there's all this sort of like pie in the sky stuff that I'm wanting that we don't have yet.
Right. Sure.
And, you know, I'm really, really wanting, and I won't, I'll try not to belabor the point, but I'm really wanting that thing where you talk to the air and your home takes care of the things that you're asking to be taken care of. And we're so far from that being anything more than dress up. Like, these baby steps we're taking are playing dress up for that future.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that, playing dress up. It's a lot like that. It's very frustrating being in such a rudimentary place with this technology.
Right. And obviously you have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the name of this segment for the notes that I had before we started recording was Smart Home Pain. And I know that one of the things you were going to talk about was like a recent sort of like some rigmarole you had to go through.
Right. But before we talk about that, you had notes.
Oh yeah. Believe it or not, I actually do have, I've got a text edit document that I've been editing for years now. So I plug in the date. I plug in the episode number. Now, I should say I usually plug in the date. I usually plug in the episode number. When I was still making up a new title every week, I would, you know, maybe make up the actually plug in the title that I was going to do.
Wait, you were making those up? Yeah. I thought those were all legit jobs.
No. The spoiler. They were made up. And then I would actually make a note about, you know, who I was introducing so that I would make sure to actually do that. They got a little note about who the sponsor is going to be. And then I have a little section for topics. Yeah. And I've got the outro.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, believe it or not,
you think, you know, someone. Wow. Anyhow, the pain thing that I was sharing with you before the show. Yeah. Okay. So I have this ongoing problem where my HomePod and two HomePod minis will get kind of flaky with Apple Music streaming and with Siri shortcuts. Okay. And what I mean is, the devices will tell me when I ask for certain music that there's a problem, or they'll play one song and then stop. Or they will insist on playing the wrong thing over and over. And the fix for that is I power cycle the HomePods and everything's fine again. Hmm. And they'll do the same. Well, not the same, but they will have a problem with Siri shortcuts where, they'll just start telling me that there's a problem or that it's taking too long. And then it just gives up. Or it'll respond with mm-hmm, which I'm assuming is just a passive aggressive move to piss me off. But anyhow, power cycle, everything's fine. So what I was doing was when the problem would start, I would unplug all three, plug them all back in, and then it would be fine again. So this week I thought, well, this is ridiculous. And I put one of them on a Wemo switch a while ago. So I decided everything needs to be on a Wemo switch so that I can tell the A lady to turn off the HomePods and turn it back on. So this brought up an ongoing pain point for me, which is all of these systems that we have for controlling our smart homes, they're stunningly limited and incredibly rudimentary. So the process today is I can create a group that consists of all three of those Wemo switches in the A Lady platform, and then use that to trigger them all on or off. And the reason I'm leaning there is because if I turn off all the Wemo switches from the HomePods, I need a way to turn them back on. So the having an alternate platform for doing that is important. What would be really nice, though, is to be able to use a single command, voice command, and have all three HomePods turn off and then turn back on again. And that could be something that starts a process by talking to the S lady or the A lady, I don't care. But where I'm going with this is that I believe the only way I'm going to be able to create a single command that handles all of that is by creating if this then that recipes that I'm then calling from the A lady. And I believe what I'm going to have to do is create two IFT recipes and then nest one inside the other. So the first one will be turn everything off, then call the second one, which turns everything back on. Okay, so I can figure this out, and this is probably what I'm doing this weekend. But most people, this is not something that would even occur to them to try and figure out, and it should be pretty simple. Just like, hey, S lady, power cycle all the HomePods. And then you hear, okay, or, oh, and then it's dead. And then a minute later, everything's back, whatever. And that's just one example. Why can't I walk into my place and say, hey, S lady, I'm home, which triggers whatever I need to happen when I'm home. Set the living room lights to 50% and turn on and start playing Brian Chaffin's latest album.
Sure. Yeah. That's going to be a fun night there at the Gannett household.
Right. Cause that's how it works. And, but I mean, the way it is right now, you can't gang up a bunch of stuff like that. It's everything has to be its own individual thing.
You can't. And adding stuff is a pain too. We talked recently about my revelation that if I replaced light switches instead of light bulbs with smart switches, instead of replacing the light bulbs with smart bulbs, that I could keep the dumb bulbs in their sockets, the cheap dumb bulbs in their sockets, and not have to worry about adding individual bulbs to scenes and all that other stuff. I could just add the switch that controls multiple lights. By the way, part of that is because in the place I'm living, one switch might actually control four or six light bulbs. Mm-hmm. Or certainly two, or, you know, and there are several that are like that. There's a lot of ceiling can lights and things like that. And replacing the switches is cheaper, but it's also easier to manage. It's easier to add stuff or to not have to add anything. All of that sort of stuff is really got me thinking about some of these pain points. And to me, we have to be headed towards a period where, like, if you are adding some device to your home, the A lady or the S lady or the G lady or whomever is asking you, hey, I see this device. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to add, do you want me to allow it onto your network? And then, you know, you say yes or you say no. And then the your network is taking care of all of the stuff. It's taking care of, like, okay, well, you know, or maybe he or she might say, should I add this to the living room? Mm-hmm. Because it's figuring out where it is. It's figuring out that it's in your living room, and it's also figuring out by context what it is. So, for instance, some kind of surround sound system. So you're probably adding that to your TV, especially if you only have one TV in the house, and your network should be able to understand all of this. Which brings me to Apple telling us years ago, several years ago, I think you were still writing for us. You were still an employee at TMO when Apple told us that their goal was to make Siri understand us and understand the, you know, like, context and actually be able to understand what it is that we're wanting. So that we weren't just training ourselves to learn rote phrases that triggered stuff.
Which would be wonderful. We're definitely not there. It's still very much learn how to say the right things to get the response that you want.
Apple's, but Apple's better at that. Way better at that.
Yes, I agree. And I can imagine some people saying that the A-Lady platform is better for that. And I would counter with, if you want to create something that is natural sounding communication to trigger something, you're probably creating that yourself and entering the phrase that you want to say. And that's not the same as the platform itself learning how to communicate more naturally with us.
Yeah, I feel very strongly that at least at this point, that the Alexa platform as a whole is designed for us to train ourselves how to control everything.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's exactly what's going on.
And
this as someone that has tons of Alexa routines that I've set up.
And HomeKit is a mix of that while also understanding. And I think that there are, for instance, like if you have lights added to a room with the S Lady, there are multiple ways that you can actually trigger those lights that you didn't actually have to set up because the S Lady is understanding partially what you're saying. So we're getting some of that, but we need so much more for this stuff to not only be acceptable, but to truly be useful. Like we need to not have to think about these things.
I agree. The ideal that Gene Roddenberry created for us with the voice command computer system, it's something that we actually need to have.
Yeah.
That's the foundation that we have right now. And I feel like we haven't gone beyond the foundation. So there's no framing yet. There's definitely no drywall going up. It's just the foundation sitting there.
No, and that's completely right. You're completely right. And I know that we talked several episodes ago, but relatively recently, where we talked about kind of where we hope that the smart home world will, will eventually be. Like some of the things that we hoped would come along for smart home tech. But what we didn't talk about was what we were talking about today, which is why we want that. Why, where those friction points are now. And exactly some of the at least conceptual things that need to happen before we get to this useful world. I don't want to call it a better world, just a useful world of smart home. I mean, smart home stuff is still largely the domain of nerds.
I have to agree. And I say this as someone that has so much smart home stuff in my place.
You're a nerd. I'm a nerd. We're both nerds.
Yeah.
And we enjoy playing with this stuff. And we don't mind. Like, for instance, I accepted the delay. Like, it's okay. You walk into a room. It's so much faster to flick the switch with your hand than to say, hey, whatever lady, turn on these lights. And even when you do say, hey, whatever lady, turn on these lights, you've got some kind of delay before the lights actually go on. Right?
Right. And they may not go on, or they may not all come on, or they may not all come on the right color.
But I accept it's a crapshoot for the trade-off and be able to have settings where, for instance, from bed, I can say, lights out. And that's my phrase for turning out all of the lights. Or I can not be at the house and I can turn on a light or turn off a light. Or if I don't have one of these, but if I had a garage door opener that was connected to HomeKit, I could check to see if I actually closed the garage door. Like I accepted the additional friction points of having that delay versus hitting the switch for all of the other benefits it brings us. But we need the benefits while also not having those friction points.
Right. And while we're sitting here having our little discussion and complaining, and people are at least some people are probably saying something like, oh, boo-hoo,
for
look
sure.
at the poor guys that for can't sure. get their lights to turn on the way they want. Yes, that's totally a valid response. But the other part of this for me is looking at family members that could use technology to assist them to have a better quality of life, and thinking about people that might have some sort of disability where being able to voice command their home would improve their quality of life as well. And right now, we have all of this promise and all of this technology, and at this point, many years of practical commercial use, where I feel like we should be able to do more than we can, and I feel like in one aspect, we as consumers are being let down.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to fight you on that. I don't think it's so much that we're being let down, is that we're just nowhere near where we need to be yet.
That's a letdown.
We have to go through these steps. We have to go through this process to get to where we want. While at the same time demanding in our petulant way that we have all the goodies now. I mean, it's still being able to have your lights come on and off with your voice or from 15 states away. That is still pretty sci-fi.
It is. And I have to say, when I have traveled internationally and needed to look inside my place and to be able to do that from the other side of the planet in real time and then turn a light on or off or change the thermostat because I forgot to, that is so cool.
Yeah, that is
awesome.
That is sci-fi stuff. And, you know, having your lights come on when you come home, i.e. when you return to your network, or having the lights go off, or having the outside lights go on and the inside mm-hmm. lights go off just by leaving, that's magical. Those things are fantastic. And it's those again, I want to repeat this. It's those features that has me accept the obviously inferior experience of not hitting the light switch and talking to the S lady and waiting for her to get it done. That's mm-hmm. what makes it worth it.
Yes. Yeah. And what I'm hoping, look, Brian, I'm about to turn us into the heroes in this. What I'm hoping is that the pain points that you and I and everyone else in the same boat are dealing with today, and the things that we're doing to try and find workarounds and to make things better, helps the companies that are making this stuff for us right now to improve and get things to a point where it does become seamless and it works the way we expect. And then everyone else can get in on this, and the people that need to have this technology to assist them to have a better quality of life will be able to take advantage of this in a meaningful way as well.
Yeah. I agree with that.
That's what I want to see.
And the, you know, the touchstone for this conversation was that Apple's head of home stuff left. I think he went to Google, is that right?
I don't even remember, but I think the problem is actually that he's still standing outside his office door saying, "Hey, S lady, unlock the door." And it's going, mm-hmm. So he hasn't left. He just can't get in. That's my guess. Or, hey, S lady, let me in. Let me in. I'm sorry. It looks like you don't have any HomeKit devices set up. I get that one a lot. I
laugh because it's funny. It's true. Home services leads. Destination unknown is the current reporting. We don't know where he's going.
So Sam, he turned Find My off.
Sam Jadala was his name. He had the home services department section, whatever, of Apple for just under 3 years. We don't know where he's gone. He used to work for Microsoft, founded his own brand of smart locks, which has gone out of business, you know, since he left. And we don't know where he is. So we also don't know why he left. Regardless, I feel like all the stuff that we're talking about is pretty inexorable. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, and it's a matter of how we get there. And I still feel like Apple's approach to this is superior to everybody else's approach to this.
I'm with you. I complain a lot, but at the same time, I really prefer using the HomeKit platform for smart home control.
Yeah. Even though you also use other things.
I do.
Right. All right. With that in mind, let's see. Let's do this thing here. I always say that. Because I'm not. Whatever. Jeff, listen, that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us. And our sponsor this week has been Coinbase. And once again, for a limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/ACM. Jeff, tell us where our listeners can find you.
Well, they can find me in the corner saying, "Hey, S lady." No, seriously, turn it on. Hey, yes. Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamut on both. YouTube.com/JayGamut for my videos. Mm-hmm. And sometimes here, a lot of Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner. Most Thursdays and Fridays on The Big Show and The Mac Show. And I kind of get around still.
You do kind of get around. And if you have listened to the show and for some reason you liked it, after you book an appointment with a local therapist, you should subscribe to the podcast and leave me a review. I don't care what you say. Just tell me what you think. I would appreciate that. And on that happy note...